And welcome back. As Veterans Day approaches this weekend, we continue to follow local veterans and their families through their experiences with services from the VA system. If you or your loved one has experiences with the VA, we'd like to hear them. Tweet us at STL on Air with the hashtag MySTLVA or email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. In part two of this three-part series, Mission Continues fellow Monica Ramirez takes us into the health centers and hospitals alongside St. Louis veterans and their families and officials from the VA health system. Monica, former combat correspondent for the U.S. military in Iraq and South Korea, brings us these stories now.
You know, I never told them when I was coming. Sometimes I would sneak in there just to see if he was being taken care of.
When I'm there, the care is just a little bit better.
The doctors looked at us all crazy. Well, you don't have PTSD. You shouldn't be getting this.
They're pretty quick with looking at the book and saying, take this pill, take this pill.
I shouldn't have to keep continuously take pills, give me big bottles of pills.
I take 14 pills a day.
I wanted to hit him. I wanted to choke his tongue out of his mouth.
I made him a promise the day we left Jefferson Barracks. He would never have to go back there again.
He should have the best medical care that this world could provide.
If they was in a war, they would understand it.
Not just making them a number.
It was always a different resident. It was always a new face.
I would never see the same doctor.
They served so we could be out here walking free.
The highlight of my life was serving my country.
But what if I wasn't his voice?
I got a younger son, and I said, whatever you do, don't you never go into service. Don't you go.
This is I'm never going home.
These are the stories of veterans in St. Louis fighting to get help from the VA after returning home from service. I'm Monica Ramirez. For this three-part series, I talked with veterans and family members of veterans about their journey recovering from the consequences of war through services provided by the VA. In part one, we follow these vets along the complicated benefits application process. Here, in part two, we hear about their personal experiences with VA hospitals and their doctors. In part three, we'll try to understand the hopes and mindset of a veteran returning to civilian life and the social programs that can and do help. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported in 2014 that the medical centers at John Cochran and Jefferson Barracks were ranked fifth worst out of 141 health systems in the country. Nothing much has changed here in 2017. Earlier this year, the Department of Veteran Affairs released a relative performance report that compared St. Louis to other VA medical centers using a star rating system from 1 to 5. St. Louis came in at 2 out of 5. This is Tim Yendel, a Gulf War veteran. I spoke with him at a shelter for homeless veterans where he stays. He only arrived there after hitting rock bottom from 15 years of alcohol and drug abuse. For him, the recovery process at the shelter feels hurried and rushed.
It's not fair. There's just not enough room, and people are dying on the streets to get in here. And then when you get here, you know, the first thing they want to know is, how are you going to get out of here? Where are you going to go? You know, you're under a lot of stress when you first get here anyway, and you're just glad you're protected and you're safe. And then you got to figure out what you're going to do next in 14 days. I think that they should initially work on your home placement or situation the first week before they even start with your treatment. Let's figure out where you're going to go.
Upon his return from combat in Vietnam, Gerald Agee was frightened by violent urges and nightmares attributed to PTSD.
I had problems, nightmares, wanted to kill, wanted to shoot somebody. And I was really confused because I didn't know what I was going through. You cry many nights. Sometimes you hallucinate. There's other times you still think about Vietnam, or you have a nightmare at night, you fall out of bed, you jump up and stuff like that. It's just sad, but you can't cure PTSD.
Gerald's patience is broken, and any resources he has to deal with his PTSD and anger management are frequently tested with doctors at the VA. The violent urges he found himself dealing with after the war continued to test his fortitude. He feels many VA doctors act rudely towards him.
He was very rude, and I gritted my teeth. I wanted to hit him. I wanted to choke his tongue out of his mouth because he was a very dishonest guy.
Maybe the learned battle tactic seemed just as reliable in the civilian world. For people like Gerald, the process of complaining to a patient advocate might seem like the long way around solving problems with rude doctors. So, in Gerald's mind, quick and violent seems like a justified solution. Choking the doctor was avoided in a recent encounter with his eye doctor.
I said, games, we're playing games. Now, if I grabbed him by his throat and choked him, it wouldn't have been my fault. That was the doctor's fault.
The most complete treatment for PTSD involves two types of intervention, medical and psychological. There's cognitive behavioral therapy in the form of group classes and private appointments that address things like anger management, knowing your triggers, and learning how to trust people again. And then there's the pharmaceutical side, which seems to many veterans as a band-aid on a bullet wound.
I shouldn't have to keep continuously take pills, give me big bottles of pills, and they tell you to take the pills. They don't work.
Give me an answer. Give me a lie. I've been climbing up this ladder. I've been wasting my time.
I go back again, I never see the same doctor, and that's not right.
The stakes are high for a person suffering from post-war PTSD, and Gerald is finding himself fighting a losing battle.
We need to get something different, if not, I don't know what's going to happen.
Jonathan Hurley went through the same thing as Gerald. No consistency and always having to repeat their story to a different person.
No, I was always seeing different people. I never had just one, you know, specialty care provider. It was always a different resident. It was always a different someone, you know, a new face, always.
Sometimes pills help and sometimes they don't. But it's the doctors who administer them these veterans have to trust.
They're pretty quick with looking at the book and saying, take this pill and take this pill. I take 14 pills a day.
Gerald Agee.
My problem is with doctors. They read the books, go to school, and that's it. We had people there at the JB, John Cochran, play games with us and stuff. Well, you know, there is nothing wrong with you. There is nothing wrong with you.
It's the same old story. Another combat veteran coming home from battle to face another battle with the VA.
Hearing tests, they said I was playing games with them and stuff like that. You know, you either hear, you don't hear. The doctors looked at us all crazy. Well, you don't have PTSD. You shouldn't be getting this. They're not honest with the veterans. And they need to work with these veterans and do it right than to sit here and play the games with the guys, because that's nonsense.
I got this information from the VA's own website. To qualify for a position with the VA, you have to be a U.S. citizen, graduated from an approved accredited program, if education is required for the position, have a current, full, active, and unrestricted professional license from any state in the United States, and English language competent.
They had foreign doctors. They can't speak English. This is wrong. That is wrong. I mean, there's Vietnam vets just went and talked to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't. He just said, no PTSD. And, you know, he may get that out, but to really communicate with you, he couldn't speak English good at all. You cannot understand him, a lot of the words.
For Gerald, the language barrier only compounds the trust violation from before.
I mean, I wish the people would have had themselves over there in the jungle of Vietnam. Whether you was going to live from one second to the next, they would look at things altogether different. If they was in a war, they would understand it.
Sadly, we'll hear similar concerns about relatability and empathy from the civilian world in Part 3. where we underscore the obvious. Love and compassion are just as important as pills and shelter.
And getting to know these people, not just making them a number.
To make up for all the things the VA has been reported to fail at, caregiving from family is a necessary component. Lori Odie, widow of Vietnam veteran Donald Odie, will be the first to admit how hard caregiving can be.
It's very hard for that person. It's very hard on their family. But you know what? When you love someone, you love them unconditionally. Not one time through all this did I ever doubt that I wouldn't stand by him. Like most people, walk, run, whatever. My family, my grandchildren especially, we stood by him and took very good care of him.
Her saga with the VA is horrifying and hard to listen to. Out of respect for her family, we won't hear it all. But she wanted to tell it, and she wants you to know about it. Here's just a bit of her view from the battlefield.
He was sat there and he went to the nurse's station. For 25 minutes, the nurses were on their personal phones. My husband had bathroom problems. He asked them to use the bathroom. They said, you can wait. He had an accident. Another time, I came there at supper time. His tray from lunch was still sitting there. They hadn't fed him lunch. They hadn't fed him supper. It hadn't been taken out of the room or nothing. And all these nurses sitting at the nurse's station on their personal cell phones. And then you take it up with the supervisor. And she says, well, it really wasn't like that. Could you imagine your loved one not getting a drink? Could you imagine your loved one not getting fed? Worst nightmare anybody could imagine to have. You know, I never told him when I was coming. Sometimes I would sneak in there just to see if he was being taken care of. We'd get ready to go home. It would be a 20-minute ordeal because he would cry. A grown man. At 63 years old, he'd be out there crying for what they've done to him. I made him a promise the day we left Jefferson Barracks, he would never have to go back there again, and he never went back there.
Lori's husband, Donald, died in 2015 after 8 years in the VA system. Lori's been on the front lines of her husband's battle for too long, and it's a battle she thinks more people need to know about.
Because I'm not only speaking for my husband, but what if I wasn't his voice? They served our country. They served so we could be out here walking free.
Tamara Gilmore accompanies her elderly veteran father to appointments at the VA and feels indignant about the way veterans are treated in this country.
He should have the best medical care that this world could provide at no cost.
Tamara is her father's advocate. After being drafted into the Army and sent to Vietnam, he returned home with many losses. His daughter fills in the gaps the VA cannot, and she's grateful to do it.
He doesn't really like to talk about it. I think he lost a lot of friends in that time. And he doesn't like any memories of anything. If it was bad, he doesn't want to have anything to remind him of that. And he says all the time, I'm just waiting to die. His favorite saying is, for what? They don't care. So we just go day to day, and we don't talk much about it.
As her father's advocate, she takes matters into her own hands when she can.
When I'm there, the care is just a little bit better. I'm aggressive. I cook his meals. I wash his clothes. And I've been doing that since I was about 18.
Well, he is definitely lucky to have you.
No, it's the other way around. I'm lucky to have him.
That's sweet.
I was on the internet researching for this series and I came across a comic strip. Two veterans are talking at the local VFW and went something like this. Veteran number one, Iraq, huh? What was your toughest battle? Fallujah? Haditha? Karbala? Veteran number two replied, the VA. The VA St. Louis Healthcare System Chief of Staff, Dr. Michael D. Crittenden, felt that having family, support, and speak up for their loved ones was better for their overall health care.
Sometimes patients don't hear everything that doctors say, and sometimes patients can't understand everything that doctors say because it's not made as simply as possible. So I would just reiterate that, you know, I think it is a best practice and one that I recommend to my family. Whenever I have a loved one in the hospital, I try and get there, or I have my family member there to hear also what the doctor is saying and to add information. But I will tell you that, you know, our doctors strive to do that with or without the family being there to communicate to the best of their ability.
When confronted with the negative encounters veterans and their families had, Director Repko and Chief of Staff Crittenden vocalized the various precautions that they have put in place to ensure all veterans get the best health care possible.
So first I would say that I would want to speak with that veteran to understand, you know, when and where that happened, so that we could address the nursing staff and the others who were responsible, you know, for the care that day, because we would want to try and pinpoint that. So that would be, you know, the first piece. That is not the care that we want to deliver. That is not our expectation by any stretch of the imagination.
So if we can get specifics, we will look at, particularly if it's somewhat recent, we will look into the nursing notes. We will talk with the staff involved and all of the staff that are involved, not just maybe the one staff that is being complained of again, because we want to get a wide range. And, you know, anytime we hear an incident like that, you know, we thoroughly investigate it and try and find out why it happened, not just who was involved, but why it was happening and how can we prevent that from happening again.
We all do what we call leadership rounds, where we walk around, you know, various units, regardless of whether it's, you know, the spinal cord unit, the hospice unit, you know, et cetera, to see how things are going and to observe what's going on. So that's another mechanism where we can keep track of what's going on in the hospital.
In closing, the chief of staff had nothing but praise for the health care provided here in St. Louis.
I will say that we provide world-class care on a daily basis in every single patient encounter that we have. I'm absolutely comfortable with the care that our doctors and nurses and allied health personnel deliver. The reason I know that is from having practice here, from being a leader here and going on leadership rounds, from talking to veterans one-on-one, from receiving letters from congressmen and from veterans who have sent those letters congratulating us, you know, on the care, and also hearing back, you know, at veterans town halls. We go to veterans town halls where we hear about the good things and the bad things, and the good comments outweigh the bad. So that's how I know how well we're doing. And, you know, we absolutely want to have every veteran to come to this medical center and sing our praises when they leave. And our providers are absolutely dedicated to that proposition. And not just the providers, but the housekeepers, the schedulers, you know, the coders, the accountants, everyone. We know that delivering care to veterans is, you know, an honorable thing to do. And that's why we're all here. We all choose to be here.
In part three, we'll hear these vets explain how social programs through the VA can help them understand what they themselves and their fellow veterans are going through, and how to transition back to life as they used to remember it, however far away it seems. For St. Louis Public Radio, I'm Monica Ramirez.
That was Mission Continues fellow and Army veteran Monica Ramirez, who continues to follow her fellow veterans through their journey with the VA in the last and final part of the series, which airs here tomorrow. This series and other archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available online at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.